Chapter 2, World Crusader. Father Mateo was not satisfied to limit his crusade to South America. The entire world had to be won for the Sacred Heart. Therefore, he set about making known his work and the results obtained to bishops and superiors of religious orders throughout the world. This was a tremendous task, and one that would require a great many willing hands to copy letters which were to be sent far and wide. Where did the young priest go to find these secretaries? Not to the seminary or the convent or to young businesswomen, but rather to a group of young children. Yes, with the foolishness that confounds the wise, he gathered together a small group of youngsters to whom he explained his project. They were going to be his secretaries. He would give them letters in various languages which they could copy, an arduous task for children who didn't even understand the meaning of the words they were writing. They had been well prepared for this task, for Father Mateo had given them a private retreat in which he had explained how he was depending more on their prayers and sacrifices than on the letters to make this letter-writing campaign a success. One little girl asked her mother for permission to stay up at night to write her letters. And as an extra sacrifice, she wrote them kneeling. She offered this to the Sacred Heart for the conversion of her father. Such a thoroughly supernatural way of spreading the work was bound to be a success. Letters came back from archbishops and bishops, from superiors of religious communities in all parts of the world. The Archbishop of Tokyo wrote telling of his hearty approval and announcing that the work was already underway in Japan. In the archives of the Sacred Heart's Fathers in Fairhaven, Massachusetts, is a letter written in French, dated 1913, and addressed to the superior of the monastery. It was written by one of the child secretaries and was signed by Father Mateo. It told of the supernatural origin of this work and the blessings that followed wherever it was begun. The superior was urged to begin the enthronement in the United States. He did, and thus the crusade had its inception in this country, thanks to a little child in South America. War. The year 1914 was momentous for Europe and the entire world. The effects of two events of that year are still being felt. You'll read about one of them in the history books. The other is recorded in heaven. In 1914, World War I broke out. It was also the year Father Mateo carried his crusade to Europe. As a result of his unique letter-writing campaign, invitations had been coming in from all parts of the world, especially from members of his own congregation. He was being urged to come to Europe to make known the enthronement of the Fathers of the Sacred Hearts. Accordingly, it was decided to send Father Mateo to Europe to preach in the institutions of the congregation for a relatively short time, after which he was to return to South America. 40 years passed, and Father Mateo had not set foot again on South American soil. When he failed to return to South America at the end of the year, Father Mateo says he received a letter from his saintly mother in which she demanded to know if they had forgotten how to count in Europe. 8 months had passed, and still her son had not returned. The enthronement founder was on the high seas when news was received that war had broken out on August 1, 1914. On reaching Paris, Father Mateo was advised to postpone his preaching until more peaceful times. His answer was typical. Did Noah build the ark after the deluge? But his stay in Paris was short. The Germans were already sending zeppelins over the city. The priest was obliged to leave. Thereupon he decided to return to Paray-le-Monial, the cradle of his work. Here he preached his first sermon in halting French, and here too he received his first serious setback. It seems the priest who had invited Father Mateo to preach was so enthusiastic about the enthronement that he printed the sermon in a bulletin. It fell into the hands of the bishop, a former chaplain of the Visitation Convent, and one who enjoyed a considerable reputation as an authority on all that concerned the revelations. What was the surprise of the two priests when a letter arrived from the bishop ordering the South American priest to desist preaching the novel doctrine, which was nowhere to be found in the writings of St. Margaret Mary. If he persisted, drastic steps would be taken. This was enough to put anyone's faith to the test. But Father Mateo knew that if the Sacred Heart permitted this to happen in the very place where he had inspired him to begin his crusade, there was a purpose behind it, and it would all work out for the best. And it did. A famous letter. About this time, St. Pius X died. Anxious to obtain the approval of his successor, Pope Benedict XV, Father Mateo went to Rome, where he was invited to stay in the South American seminary, Pio Latino, directed by the Jesuits. He was told he might have to wait a long time for an audience. Rome was slow. To the surprise of everyone, the audience came quickly, and soon after, Father Mateo was the happy possessor of an autographed letter from His Holiness, heartily endorsing the enthronement crusade and encouraging him to continue his efforts to enkindle in Catholic homes the flames of love for the Most Sacred Heart of Jesus. In this remarkable document, the Holy Father made this strong affirmation: "Nothing, as a matter of fact, is more suitable to the needs of the present day than your enterprise." Because of the importance of this letter, we give it here in full. To our beloved son, Matteo Crawley Beauvais, priest of the Congregation of the Sacred Hearts of Jesus and Mary. Beloved son, health and apostolic benediction. We have read your letter with interest and likewise the documents that accompanied it. From them we have learned of the diligence and zeal with which for many years you have devoted yourself to the work of consecrating families to the Most Sacred Heart of Jesus, in such a way that while His image is installed in the principal place in the home as on a throne, our divine Savior Jesus Christ is seen to reign at each Catholic hearth. Our predecessor, Leo XIII of happy memory, had already consecrated the entire human race to the Divine Heart, and his noteworthy encyclical, Annum Sacrum, on this subject is well known. Notwithstanding that general and collective consecration, however, the devotion as applied to each family in particular is not without its purpose. On the contrary, it is perfectly in accord with the former and can only contribute to the religious aim of that pontiff. For what concerns each one in particular affects us more deeply than the interests we share with others. Therefore, we rejoice at the thought that your work has borne abundant fruit in this direction, and we exhort you to persevere with diligence in the apostolate which you have begun. Nothing, as a matter of fact, is more suitable to the needs of the present day than your enterprise. To pervert, both in private and in public life, the concept of morality engendered and fostered by the Church, and after having almost effaced the last vestige of Christian wisdom and decency, to lead human society back to the miserable institutions of paganism, such is the plan which too many are trying to realize today. Would that their efforts were fruitless. Moreover, the attacks of the wicked are directed primarily against the family, for containing within itself, as it does, the principles and, as it were, the germ of all human society, they clearly see that the change, or rather the corruption, which they are trying to bring about in human society will necessarily follow once the corruption of the family itself has been accomplished. Hence, divorce laws are introduced to put an end to the stability of marriage, Children are forced to follow an official teaching, for the most part, estranged from religion, thus eliminating the authority of parents in the matter of the highest importance. Moreover, countenance is given to the spread of a shameful course of selfish indulgence, which contravenes the laws of nature, and striking a blow at the human race as its very source, stains the sanctity of marriage with impure practices. You do well, then, dear son, while taking up the cause of human society, to arouse and propagate above all things a Christian spirit in the home by setting up in each family the reign of the love of Jesus Christ. And in doing this, you are but obeying our divine Lord himself, who promised to shower his blessings upon the homes wherein an image of his heart should be exposed and devoutly honored. It is assuredly, therefore, a holy and salutary work to secure for our beloved Redeemer such worship and honor. But that is not everything. It is of the utmost importance to know Christ, to know his doctrine, his life, his passion, his glory. For to follow him does not consist in allowing ourselves to be swayed by a superficial religious sentiment that easily moves weak and tender hearts to tears but leaves vices intact. To follow Christ is to be permeated with a lively and constant faith, which not only acts upon the mind and heart, but likewise governs and directs our conduct. Moreover, the real reason why Jesus is neglected by so many and but little loved by others is to be found in the fact that he is almost entirely unknown to the former and not known sufficiently by the latter. Continue, therefore, beloved son, in your efforts to enkindle in Catholic homes the flames of love for the most sacred heart of Jesus. But likewise, and before all else, and this is our wish, endeavor to make this love result from a knowledge of Christ, the Lord, and from a greater and deeper understanding of the truths and laws which he himself has given us. For our part, in order to encourage the piety of the faithful in this matter, we extend to all families of the Catholic world that consecrate themselves to the most sacred heart of Jesus all those spiritual favors which our predecessor, Pius X, of happy memory, granted with pontifical liberality in 1913 at the instance of the bishops of Chile to the families of that republic consecrated to the Sacred Heart. As a pledge of divine favors, and as a mark of our paternal goodwill, we impart to you affectionately, beloved son, the apostolic blessing, given at St. Peter's, Rome, this 27th day of April, 1915, in the first year of our pontificate. Benedict, Pope, 15th. As though this approbation of the highest authority of the Church were not enough, another encouragement and endorsement came from a foremost Jesuit theologian, the famous Cardinal Belot. The learned cardinal, who evidently had heard of Father Mateo's setback at Paray, masterfully refuted the argument that the enthronement was a novelty and not to be found in the writings of St. Margaret Mary by stating the contrary. Far then from seeing in the work anything which could even in a dream resemble a dangerous novelty, I see in it, on the contrary, all that is likely to arouse in the highest degree the zeal of such souls as are permeated with the love of our Lord. I see in it, to begin with, a simple and practical method of realizing the desires expressed to St. Margaret Mary that his heart should be the object of a special worship. Who amongst us but recalls the two promises that he made to his servant? I will give peace to their families. I will bless the houses wherein the image of my Sacred Heart shall be exposed and honored. This is the origin of the ceremony which you set as a headline in your program, and I have no doubt that you also drew it from the example of that first feast spontaneously organized in private by the novices of Paray-le-Monial on July 20, 1685, in honor of the Sacred Heart. One may read in the life of St. Margaret Mary the description of this, the first enthronement carried out with closed doors in the part of the convent reserved for the novitiate. One should above all read the expression of joy that inundated the soul of St. Margaret Mary on that occasion. Had she at that time a presentiment that in this small grain of mustard seed was the great tree beneath whose branches for more than 2 centuries the birds of heaven have found shelter? I do not know. But what I do know is this, that if the book of the future had been opened to her at the page entitled The Enthronement of the Sacred Heart in the Home, she would have recognized in it the expansion of the act so delicately outlined by her little novices. She would have seen in it nothing less than the accomplishment of the august desire of which she had been made the confidential recipient. In the above passage, the cardinal is referring to an incident in the life of St. Margaret Mary when she was mistress of novices. On the occasion of her name day, the feast of St. Margaret, she suggested to her novices that instead of honoring her, they honor the Sacred Heart. Accordingly, an altar was prepared in the novitiate, beautifully decorated with flowers. On it was enthroned a picture of the Sacred Heart, drawn by St. Margaret Mary herself. Kneeling before the image of the Sacred Heart, she led her novices in an act of consecration which she herself had composed. This is exactly what takes place in the enthronement ceremony, as the cardinal points out. When Father Matteo returned to France, he received a letter from the bishop who had refused him permission to preach the enthronement. This time, with the humility which is characteristic of great men, the prelate told Father Matteo that he had been misinformed about the nature of his work and ended by inviting him to his diocese with open arms. A whirlwind tour. Sometimes we're amazed at the whirlwind speaking tours of candidates for the presidency of the United States, but these are insignificant compared with the campaign carried on for the Sacred Heart by Father Matteo. With incredible zeal and unflagging energy, he preached the length and the breadth of Europe as many as 8 times a day. And this continued year after year, with brief periods of rest, usually spent in making personal retreats or preparing sermons and articles. At a time when there were no public address systems, he preached in Europe's greatest cathedrals and churches to enormous crowds, spellbound by his eloquence, simplicity, and soul-stirring conviction. At the same time, he carried on an ever-increasing correspondence that went to all parts of the world, founded numerous secretariats to carry on the work, and with it all, managed to make a nightly holy hour despite great fatigue. During these hectic years, Father Matteo's health was far from good. For a long time he suffered from severe attacks of gout that forced him to hobble about on crutches. Once he was carried to the pulpit by 2 men, and he preached his sermon kneeling. Wherever he preached, remarkable results followed. Many hardened sinners returned to the sacraments. Family life and Eucharistic devotion in parishes were transformed. The spiritual life of the clergy and religious were intensified through the countless retreats conducted by the preacher of sanctity. The enthronement in Spain. Father Matteo is credited with having helped save Spain from communism. If this is true, the world owes him a great debt of gratitude. For if Spain had fallen to the Reds, today probably all of Europe, and perhaps South America, would be enslaved by the atheistic communists. In no country of Europe did Father Matteo have greater success than in the great Catholic country of Spain, so hated by its enemies, so so little understood even by Catholics. As a result of his many visits to Spain, countless families enthroned the Sacred Heart as their king. Moreover, public enthronement took place in towns, villages, and cities. This remarkable outward and social acknowledgement of the sovereign dominion of the King of Kings culminated in the solemn enthronement of the Sacred Heart as King of Spain on May 30, 1919. It was Father Mateo who first proposed the idea, which was received with universal enthusiasm. Appeals for funds were made to the Spanish people, and the donations were handled by the Sisters of the Sacred Hearts. The statue was donated by the ambassador from Peru. Together with the base, it was 91 feet high. The shrine required 882 tons of quarried stone. The cornerstone was laid on July 1, 1916, at the Cerro de los Angeles, a hill that is very close to the capital and the geographical center of Spain. After a solemn triduum preached by Father Mateo in the Royal Church of St. Jerome, the enthronement took place on May 30th, the feast of King St. Ferdinand. The official act of consecration of Spain to the Sacred Heart, composed by Father Mateo, was read by King Alfonso XIII. Among those present were the Apostolic Nuncio, the Primate of Spain, some 20 bishops, the Queen of Spain, and all the civil officials of the Spanish government, headed by the Prime Minister, Dom Antonio Mora. The ceremony concluded with solemn benediction of the Most Blessed Sacrament. Executing the Sacred Heart. In 1936, a picture appeared in the press of the United States which graphically symbolized what was going on in Spain. It showed a firing squad composed of communists with rifles pointing at the statue of the Sacred Heart at Cerro de los Angeles. They were executing the King of Love. Following this sacrilegious act, they dynamited the huge monument, which became a heap of ruins. We owe the picture to someone in the watching crowd who secretly snapped the photograph that recorded the diabolic hatred of the enemies of Christ. The Sacred Heart protected his beloved Spain, and communists suffered its first major defeat. Pope Pius XII acknowledged this fact when, on the occasion of the anniversary of the founding of the Apostleship of Prayer in Spain, he broadcast to the Spanish nation an address in which he attributed Spain's defeat of communism to its loyalty as a nation to the Sacred Heart. He explicitly referred to the enthronement of 1919 and said that because Spain had publicly acknowledged Christ before men, he had visibly protected Spain from its enemies. Today, another national monument has replaced the original, and in 1952, the Chief of State, Generalissimo Francisco Franco, during the International Eucharistic Congress at Barcelona, renewed Spain's consecration to the Sacred Heart. In 1954, as a climax of a Marian Year rally, Spain's outstanding Catholic statesman consecrated his nation to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Portugal. The apparitions of Our Lady of Fatima in Portugal today are as familiar to Catholics as those of Lourdes. That they have had a profound influence on the lives of the Portuguese people goes without saying. Little, however, is known of the work accomplished by the Apostle of the Sacred Heart in helping to carry out Our Lady's message. 15 months were spent preaching the reign of the Sacred Heart in Portugal in 1927-28 and in 1931. Retreats were given to the bishops, priests, and sisters, with talks to the laity from one end of the country to another. Accompanying Father Mateo on many of his preaching tours was the saintly Father Cruz, one of the first priests to question the three seers of Fatima and to accept the authenticity of the revelations. On a visit to this country some years ago, Cardinal Serra Herrera publicly paid tribute to the profound influence of Father Mateo's preaching on the spiritual life of Portugal. More than this, it is said that he was instrumental in persuading Premier Salazar to accept the position he has held for so many years with such great success. It is safe then to say that Portugal owes a great debt of gratitude to the zealous founder of the enthronement, who preached Our Lady's message of prayer and penance long before the message was known to the rest of the world. Missionary to the missionaries. It would be impossible to give a detailed account of the seemingly endless whirlwind campaigns of the Apostle of the Sacred Heart from 1914 to 1935. In 1920, he preached in six countries: Belgium, Luxembourg, Holland, Italy, England, and Spain. During these years, he became the trusted friend of popes, cardinals, bishops, and statesmen, often consulted in important matters, and sometimes entrusted with delicate negotiations. Someday the whole story can be told, and it will be interesting reading. There is scarcely a prominent European figure of that period of whom Father Mateo cannot say, as we've often heard him say, "He was my intimate friend." In 1935 began what was to be for him one of the greatest graces of my long career, he said, namely 5 years of preaching retreats to the missionaries and the native clergy of the Far East. Upon the invitation of 12 vicars apostolic of the Orient, and with the personal sanction and blessing of Pope Pius XI, which he received in private audience on October 19, 1934, he sailed for Japan to begin this new crusade. Before he was forced to discontinue because of the Chinese-Japanese War, he had preached hundreds of retreats in 5 languages in Japan, Korea, Manchukuo, China, Indochina, the Philippines, Malaya, the Dutch East Indies, Goa, and Macau, the British East Indies, and Hawaii. Many of these retreats, especially to the native clergy, were given in Latin, besides Spanish, his native tongue, French, Italian, English, and Portuguese. A remarkable feature of this unusual apostolic mission was that Father Mateo never missed a retreat because of illness. Yet on occasions, in fever-infected missions, he found himself the only one among the retreatants not suffering from tropical fever. There's no doubt the Sacred Heart was keeping his promise to bless all the undertakings of those who devote themselves to preaching his message of merciful love. United States at last. The Chinese-Japanese War, followed by World War II, brought an abrupt end to Father Mateo's preaching in the Orient, but it also brought him, providentially, to the United States. His arrival was the answer to the prayers of many of his friends and admirers who for long years had been following him from afar, hoping for his coming to this country. Father Mateo says a pleasant surprise awaited him in the famous United States, about whose Catholics he shared the prejudices of so many foreigners. He states frankly that he believed what he'd been told, that Americans were too interested in material things to listen to a spiritual message about sanctity, generosity, and love for the Sacred Heart. "But I was greatly deceived," he said. "In all my travels, I've never met a more docile or more generous race than the Americans. I regret I did not come here years ago." This is the frank avowal he makes today. And he has reason for being astonished at the generosity of the Americans, for the response to his appeal for night adoration in the home has met with a greater response here than in any other country of the world. From the time of his arrival in California in October 1940 until his departure for Canada in July 1944, he was kept busy preaching to the clergy and laity throughout the country. Those fortunate enough to have heard him still talk about his fiery conferences as though they had been given yesterday. Yet, during his 4 years in the United States, he suffered greatly from diabetes, sometimes being so weak that he could hardly begin the opening conferences of his retreats. One of the highlights of his stay in the United States was the solemn consecration of the Chicago Archdiocese to the Sacred Heart before a crowd of over 125,000 in Soldiers Field in 1943 by Cardinal Stritch. The idea had been suggested by the enthronement apostle. Before he left the United States, he established secretariats to continue his work in various parts of the country. In California alone, he founded secretariats in San Diego, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Sacramento. They are still functioning. Canada, the end of the trail. For years, invitations to preach in Canada had reached the world missionary. At last, in 1944, he left the United States to begin what was to prove his last apostolic tour. The very day of his arrival in Kitchener, Ontario, he began his first retreat to the Resurrection Fathers. Before he was forced into a hospital 2 years later, he had given some 80 retreats almost without interruption. His last conference was to a large crowd of men in the Jesuit Church of the Immaculate Conception in Montreal. Shortly after, he was asked by the Sacred Heart to make a big sacrifice. Entering the Hotel Dieu Hospital in Montreal, he stayed there for some months until he transferred to St. Joseph's Hospital, conducted by the Sisters of Providence, in Three Rivers between Montreal and Quebec. The old priest thought surely he was to end his days in what he called, in one of these many articles, his Cloister of the Divine Will, in which he revealed a lifelong ambition, that of being a contemplative like a Trappist. As a matter of fact, severe heart attacks almost put an end to his career several times, yet he survived them all. Taking advantage of a privilege granted to him years before by Pius XI, that of offering Holy Mass seated, he was able to enjoy the consolation of daily Mass except when he was too weak even to sit at the altar. In 1948, he celebrated his golden jubilee of priesthood in the hospital room, and on that occasion had the happiness of receiving an autographed letter from His Holiness Pope Pius XII. In this letter, the Holy Father, who as Secretary of State to Pius XI had known Father Mateo, congratulated him on his 50 years of priesthood and renewed the approval of his predecessors for the enthronement crusade. He wrote, quote, "There is one thing we desire in a special way, that Christian families consecrate themselves to the Sacred Heart in such a way that His image being installed in the place of honor in the home, as on a throne, Christ the Lord is seen to reign truly within the Catholic family." Unquote. The same year, this indefatigable priest launched a worldwide campaign to have the Feast of the Sacred Heart celebrated everywhere as a great act of reparation, to bring down an avalanche of graces on a sick world. Letters went out to cardinals, archbishops, bishops, vicars apostolic, and superiors of religious communities in all parts of the world. He had the consolation of seeing a world-encircling celebration of the Feast of the Sacred Heart, for which he had campaigned so ardently through the years. His little hospital room had indeed become a powerhouse of apostolic activity. Letters, articles, and even a book came from his prolific pen. Bishops and priests came to consult him. He was called upon to convert hardened sinners, his fellow patients in the hospital. Finally, in 1952, his superiors decided that he needed the care of nursing brothers. Accordingly, he was transferred to Notre Dame de la Merci Hospital in Montreal, conducted by the Brothers of St. John of God. Here, He continued his zealous activities, except when prevented by his weakened condition. In February 1956, he was flown to Valparaiso, which he left in 1914. Despite failing health, he carried on an intensive writing apostolate until he died on May 4, 1960. Father Mateo is buried near the main altar in the Church of the Sacred Hearts, where he first preached his enthronement crusade. Surely, after so many active years spent in the service of the Sacred Heart, a great reward must have awaited him in heaven, where no doubt he finds complete fulfillment of his lifelong ambition to love him and make him better known and loved. A letter of His Holiness Pius XII to our beloved son, Father Mateo Crawley Beauvais. We have learned with paternal satisfaction that in the near future you are to celebrate the 50th anniversary of your religious profession as a member of the Congregation of the Sacred Hearts of Jesus and Mary and of the Perpetual Adoration of the Most Blessed Sacrament of the Altar. We know also, and our venerable predecessors have readily recognized, with what exceptionally effective zeal you have exercised in the course of this half century the ministry of the Gospel, aiming particularly at the enthronement of the Sacred Heart in families. As the tireless apostle of this pious work, which is so apt to foster the reign of love, mercy, and peace of the Divine Savior in homes and in nations, you have unceasingly carried it on in order that it might be known, appreciated, and adopted in the various continents to which Divine Providence has guided your steps, and indeed in the great country which now enjoys the advantage of your ardent ministry, especially regarding retreats for priests. This was a reference to the United States. He goes on, among other consolations, the foregoing is suggested to us by the happy occasion of the Golden Jubilee of your religious profession. Therefore, we wish you the greatest consolations and multiplied graces which come from above, and join with you in rendering fervent acts of thanksgiving to the Sacred Hearts of Jesus and Mary. In order to afford these consolations and graces even greater effectiveness, we most heartily forward you the apostolic blessing as a pledge of our goodwill and felicitations. Signed, Pius, Pope the 12th, from the Vatican, July 13, 1942.